So you're laid off. You want to update your skills, but the recession is hitting almost every sector of the economy. So lots of people with brand new job training certificates still can't find work. We will talk about the best retraining strategies and programs now with Sheila McGuire, Senior Vice President for Program Effectiveness at Public Private Ventures, a research group that works to improve policies and programs for low-end communities around the country. They are based here in New York. Sheila, welcome to WNYC. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
First of all, you did a study recently. Tell me about the study.
Sure. I think for the last couple of decades, conventional wisdom amongst policymakers has been that not much works in terms of outcomes, particularly for workers from low-income communities. And at the same time, over the past decade, we've had a growth in sort of sector-based or industry-linked programs to really help not only the job seeker, but find where the employer is feeling the pain and make that connection in terms of skills. So we've just published, with funding from the Charles Stewart Mott Foundation, a random control trial of three sector-focused programs. One is in Boston, Jewish Vocational Services, that helps people gain employment as medical billers, mostly women, young women. Many have been on welfare. The other is Wisconsin Regional Training Partnership, which is actually an association of employers and unions who come together and look at the needs and then sort of order up training as they need it, both incumbent worker training and pre-employment training. And they worked in the study on various sectors, healthcare, construction, manufacturing, and then Pascalis here in New York, which is a social venture in the South Bronx that recycles end-of-life computers and uses that opportunity to train people as computer technicians.
I love that term, end-of-life computers.
Yes.
We've all been through a few end-of-life computers.
You may see them in your neighborhood picking up computers.
So what did you learn comparing these three programs?
Well, we saw that for those who actually got the program as opposed to the control group, we saw 20% earnings gains over the two-year period. In the second year, so sort of you take out the opportunity costs of being out of the labor market for training, we saw a 30% earnings gains. And I think these three programs are all very different because local labor markets are inherently local. Employers have different needs. So they all look quite different. But we do think there are some common things they did that led to their success.
So, for example,
the link to employer, whether it is as I mentioned, by convening employers together to talk about what their needs are and really developing for that, labor market information in this economy is really tough. So the relationship with the employer makes all the difference in terms of really understanding what their needs are. The second, and I think this is a really critical one, is all those programs had a way to make sure that the career was a good match for folks, and that they had the basic and math and English skills to complete the coursework. Because that's a real issue in the labor market right now is the literacy skills of workers.
And there are still many employers who say, despite all the unemployment, despite all the people looking for work, I can't find workers who have the skills I need.
There are indeed. And I think that one of the roles that these effective sector programs can play is a kind of filtering process for employers. So they kind of look at who's coming in and they have an understanding of what they need, and then they're able to design this sort of just-in-time training that gets people into those jobs.
On that first criteria that you mentioned, the importance of a link with the employer,
yes,
to the job training program, does that almost say that you need to have a job before you get effective job training? Because if the employer is sponsoring the training, then you have to have a relationship with that employer.
Well, it's the organization that sponsors the training. So these organizations, the three in the study, which are all nonprofit organizations, they play a kind of intermediary or broker role for the job seeker. So they get the relationship with the employer. They understand what the employer needs. They convert that into effective training and then work with participants to see, is this a good match for you? And then help them through that training. And the training is always very hands-on.
How do you know if you're a good match for something you haven't done?
Very good question. A good program will help you understand that. You'll go in, you'll learn something about what the occupation is, you'll learn something about the kinds of aptitudes you have to have, you'll understand that whether it's outdoors or indoors, or whether it's high intensity with people or with machines, or making the connection between people and machines, that when you walk into a training program and you're considering that, you want to make sure that the program knows to make the match, help you make the match.
And let's take a phone call right now. Here's Mimi in Parsippany. Mimi, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Well, hi there. I just wanted to say that I've been on unemployment for, it's 18 months now. And through unemployment, they do have some job training, re-job training, I should say. I was accepted for the program to be able to take IT classes, or actually it's an internet course for IT or for PowerPoint, Excel, you know, Microsoft Word.
Mm-hmm.
So unemployment gave me vouchers, and it's up to me to get the certification. They will pay for certification by a certain time. And anything that unemployment has, I've been taking. I was in, you know, I'm in the age group that daddy didn't send the girls to college. So I don't have a four-year degree, but mm-hmm. I certainly have other skills.
Sheila, this is just the kind of client that you work with, right? Or whose policy, you study policies affecting.
Right. Indeed, yes. And I think that one of the things about the policy environment is the workforce system, the unemployment system, the retraining system we're working with right now was built in the high employment 1990s. So there is more of an emphasis. It's sort of set up that the best first step is to get a job. And so often the trainings are short term. They're kind of quick computer skills. And in this economy, in the 90s, you could argue whether or not that was effective. But helping people with those skills in the high employment 90s may well have helped. In today's economy, the lion's share of money being focused in this way is probably not the smartest investment.
And Mimi, is that your point? Are you saying you've taken all this job training that's available to you through unemployment, but you're not finding work anyway?
That's exactly it. They're asking for, employers are asking for a minimum BA. Now, you know, I was in upper management and making in the $50,000 range mm-hmm. above, and I'm willing to take a $20,000 cut, and still I'm not even being looked at.
It's such a sad story, and unfortunately, I think a common one. Sheila, do you have any advice for Mimi individually?
Well, I don't know Parsippany or the area, you know, her particular skills, but I do think that the issue of the four-year degree, many economists are projecting growth in areas that require more than a high school diploma, but not a four-year degree. And in some ways, some of these are counterintuitive, but some information technology jobs we're going to see, you know, here in New York City, they're focusing on three or four sectors and are offering employment centers that are focusing on transportation, healthcare, and some manufacturing as a way of trying to get their system more closely aligned to some of those industry needs. So there are definitely careers, technical careers that you can. There's some great websites that Mimi could look at, which I'm happy to link to in terms of career guides to industries, both offered by the U.S. Department of Labor and ones here in New York City that could help. But it's a tough deal, because I think one of the things our study found was that you need to have these very flexible organizations that have these strong relationships with employers and then can develop those technical trainings that, so for example, in manufacturing, that can really deliver people to those jobs. And so I think that that's the real challenge of the both at a macro level and at a micro level, for us to get job training really aligned to those needs in locally and regionally.
Mimi, thank you for your call and best of luck to you. Do you think that in New York there are certain fast, I don't know if we can call any sector of the economy fastest growing, maybe the health sector in New York, but is there anything that's particularly promising in this area that you think there is job training available for today?
I think that you mentioned healthcare, and I there is a New York City Labor Market Information Service that's really been focusing on how to figure out what are the demand occupations. Think healthcare is one of them. You know, we've been looking at layoffs in hospitals, but with healthcare reform, we're going to see a remake of the healthcare workforce. And this is an area where these kinds of programs are working now to figure out what are the new kinds of jobs in healthcare that are really going to be needed as we move to much more of a primary healthcare focus here in the city.
Ben in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Brian. So I'm calling because I work in education. I teach music at a charter school, and the only way I was hired is because it was a charter school. That is, I'm not a certified teacher. I have training in music. I have a master's in music from a different school. But my comment today has to do with my decision in the future to continue my training. The school would like for me to become certified, and if I ever want to look for a job in the DOE, that is regular non-charter public schools, I would need to get my state teacher certification. But to do so requires a number of online courses, doing the CLEP exams. It's not extremely expensive, but it could cost a few hundred, maybe a few thousand dollars. But the trick is that right now, Department of Education has a hiring freeze, so I'm not really sure if it's worth my time or effort to go through these exams and do the work required to get certification, because I don't know if the city is going to start hiring teachers in the public schools.
You certainly, your story certainly represents one of the changes of the last year and 2 years, because we used to say, regardless of what else happens in New York, health and education are growth areas, because the population of children continues to grow. They're going to continue to need more more teachers. But now there are teacher cutbacks here and all over the country, and Ben doesn't know, I don't think anybody knows, when the larger public school system is going to start hiring again.
Absolutely.
I don't know if you have anything to say. I mean, my gut would be that over a period of years, if it's just a few thousand dollars, as Ben says, to get that certification, it's worth getting. Also, Ben, if you're willing to move somewhere where there may be a shortage of teachers, if there isn't here right now. And Sheila also, gosh, you know, I mean, in a system with, what, 80,000 plus teachers, as the New York City Public School has, eventually there's just going to be churn. People are going to retire, and then there are going to be openings.
Indeed. I think that's the case, and I think we see that in other industries too, where, and I've mentioned manufacturing, but other industries where you also have a graying out. And that's where, for example, in Cleveland, I don't know, you may have seen the Times article a few weeks ago, there was a focus on manufacturing jobs are coming back, but the skilled workers are not there for local employers. Mm. So I think that this is that none of us can guess what the job market's going to do. We can, by investing in organizations that there's a bridge between the training and what they're doing and what employers need, that's where we're going to really get the relevant training from.
You know, Brian?
Ben, go ahead.
One thing that it was so surprising, working at the charter school, many of my colleagues were young, 1 or 2 years out of school. So when they entered a 4-year undergraduate teacher training program, they expected, as you said earlier, that teaching would be a profession where they could reasonably expect to find work.
Right.
Then by the time they graduated, and certainly for their younger friends who are graduating last year or in another year to come, now they're graduating and finding that crazy competition. I heard that we had an opening for a general studies teacher where there was one or two jobs and we had hundreds of applications. The other thing is I wouldn't want to move to another city where I couldn't listen to the Brian Laird show.
Well, you can always hear it online, so do what you need to do. But Ben, I've been hearing a lot of stories like that too about teacher openings and the crazy competition when people thought that it was more or less a relatively safe thing to get trained for. So your story is, and your friend's story, are hardly hardly out there on their own. Ben, good luck.
Thanks, Brian. Have a great rest of your summer.
Thanks.
I also wanted to mention that in our study, the people who really also benefit greatly from this training are people who had not yet really got a strong foothold in the economy, which makes up a lot of New Yorkers. People who maybe work full-time, about 10% of the folks had worked full-time before the study. And these individuals who have less and less skills are going to be disproportionately affected, as even as we imagine that the recovery will happen and many people who are more highly skilled will get back into the labor market. Those people at the bottom of the labor market that have few job skills beyond a high school diploma, I think that's where, for our competitiveness, if you look at, we've got to make investments there. If you look at our competitors in other countries, they are making investments in that part of the labor market. And it is absolutely critical for us nationally and in New York to make investments there.
Here's one from our website. Blossom writes, I went through retraining, law school. Now I'm unemployable and $40,000 in debt.
Yes.
And Dan in Park Slope may have a somewhat similar story. Hi, Dan.
Yeah, hi, Brian. I wanted your advice. I'm actually an Ivy League graduate with a liberal arts degree, and I've been out of the labor market for a couple of years now. I got laid off during the recession, so I went kind of vagabonding around Latin America. And now that I'm back, I can't get a corporate job. I kind of take what's given to me, like odd jobs and stuff like that. And I'm actually considering getting another bachelor's degree. I wanted to know if you recommended that, and what would I be like? Would I be at an advantage, like in a law?
In really other words, another bachelor's degree in something more technical, not a liberal
exactly.
arts.
Actually, engineering degree.
Sheila, do you have an opinion? You, the look on your face says, I'm a policy person. I don't want to tell this gentleman what to do.
I don't want to tell this gentleman what to do, but I would say that generally we need to have more of a focus on technical education. There is no doubt that if you look generally at the statistics, the more education you have, the more likely you are to earn higher wages. But there's also, it's not necessarily that college is always the right track. There are technical skills and technical trainings that can actually get you well-paying jobs that might not be a classic liberal arts education.
And Dan, the thing that comes to mind for me is that with an Ivy League education, even in liberal arts, you may not have to get a second bachelor's degree. You may be able to go on for a master's. I know someone, for example, who wanted to get a master's in a technical field who had been a liberal arts major, and what they made him do was go back and take organic chemistry, which he did at the New School, and maybe one or two other courses just to shore up some requirements, and then you can go on for a master's degree so you can at least have that higher credential.
Okay, thanks a lot for your advice.
Okay, good luck. Let's get one more in here. Mark in Westfield, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mark.
I just wanted to say real quickly to the guy who just called, yes, technical engineering is good. To everyone in general, if you're unemployed and they offer you training as a computer type person, don't take it. I've been in the computer field 30 years. There's a terrible glut of computer people and certified or uncertified people. It's a great thing to learn. If you want to go learn Excel or Microsoft Word and learn how to do a mail merge, you'll be very marketable. But to try and sell yourself as a computer technician or a IT person is going to be almost impossible. They're downsizing. The jobs are very hard to find. And almost medical billing would even be a better retraining skill.
Ouch.
Than IT. I'm sorry. I've been doing this way too long, and I'm calling a spade a spade. It's just not a worthwhile skill. Unless you're really a geek and you really want to do it, then mm-hmm. go for it. But, if you're mm-hmm. a geek, you may not even need to retrain.
Mark, thank you very much. Sheila,
I think one of the things we saw is the role of industry-recognized certifications in this study. So, for example, there is an IT certification called the A+ that can open doors for people, and that was one of the things that in the South Bronx program, people were able to get that certification. And also, but that place also had connections to the employers who were looking for people in that. So the question of industry-recognized certifications for things like IT, I think, are very important to look at.
Last question. You said that a lot of our job training and retraining policy was formulated in the high employment 90s.
I did.
And that was also linked to welfare reform, I believe.
Absolutely.
Right? Where when welfare as we knew it went away, but they didn't want to just pay for people to go to school as a new form of welfare, as you know, conservatives for the most part saw it. So you had to get training short term, quick and dirty, that maybe would be funded and then into the workforce.
Exactly.
Do you see a need for a particular kind of policy shift?
I see the need for a strategic investment in long-term skills training, but one, and you hear my theme, right? But one that is actually linked to the regional economy's needs. So it's not that, you know, we need to deal with the education levels, the basic skills levels of many of our workers, but it needs to be done in the context of real employable skills. So we need an overall skills strategy for our existing workforce. Year 2020, 65% of the workers are already in the workforce, and they are not well enough skilled to compete in the global marketplace. That's where we need an investment so women on welfare can get the skills to compete in the global marketplace.
Sheila McGuire, Senior Vice President for Program Effectiveness at the Research Group Public-Private Ventures, will continue to serve our unemployed listeners as we've done all along since this recession began. Just one of our many conversations. And Sheila, great job. Thank you very much.
Thank you.